Okay, welcome back. We've got a long way to go this afternoon, conferring with Tom and Michelle over lunch. What we're going to try to do is for Michelle to turbo through her presentation section by section. We're going to limit during this part of her presentation to questions only from both the council and the audience. And I know a lot of you have come a long way, and at the end of the at the end, when we're through the document, we're gonna take some public comment, but it will be limited. So, don't feel your time has been wasted. Michelle.
Thank you. You can't see what I see. Sorry, hold on. So there's three more subregions that have habitat management alternatives in them. Talk about the Western Gulf of Maine. Whatever comes up. No action would be the Western Gulf of Maine ground fish closure and habitat closure. I don't know why this isn't working. Sorry. I could have planned ahead for this, you'd think. Oh, there we go. And then there's a number three. Alternative two, again, is no habitat management areas, not shown. 3, 4, 5, and 6 are various combinations of other areas. So this is 3 on the right, 4 and 5. And so these include different combinations of the Bigelow Bight, Jeffrey's Ledge, and Stellwagen. There's larger and smaller versions of Stellwagen and the Bigelow Bight that are in some of these different alternatives. Alternative 6, this is the one that was added by the council in September. That would be just the large Stellwagen area. And then alternative 7 are these. The way it's written in the document is that these would be sort of add-ons to any of the other alternatives, which I guess could be an add-on to alternative 2, no HMAs. But it would identify the 12-inch roller gear restriction that currently exists, and currently, I should have a pointer, the hatched area that is sort of more rectangular almost and covers a lot of the Western Gulf of Maine closure and areas inshore as well, is where the 12-inch roller gear restriction currently applies, and it currently applies to just vessels, sector vessels or common pool ground fish vessel trips. This alternative, the way it's written up, it would apply to any types of trawl gear fishing in that area that they would have the 12-inch maximum roller gear. The solid areas are sort of a compilation of all the different areas that were sort of at the, I think, one of the last ground fish habitat committee meetings we had in the spring that were sort of on the table for discussion. And so this alternative 7B would implement the roller gear restriction as a habitat measure in the solid shaded areas. We don't have an alternative to remove the current roller gear restriction, so that would continue regardless, but then only apply to vessels fishing sort of under a sector trip or a common pool under the multi-species plan rather than applying to all trawl vessels. So, there's quite a bit of different fishing activity going on in these various areas. You know, obviously in the Bigelow Bight areas are currently open to fishing, and so there's various types of mobile gear fishing and other fishing that's occurring there. There's very little fishing that's associated with the areas that are within the Western Gulf of Maine closure. The Jeffrey's Ledge and Stellwagen areas are all entirely within the Western Gulf of Maine closure. So we'll sort of look at, as we further the economic analysis, thinking about what types of fishing might go on there. We know historically there's quite a bit of gillnet fishing, for example, on Jeffrey's Ledge, and so if you removed the overlaying ground fish closure and was just some kind of a mobile gear restricted area, you might expect to see that increase, so there may be some distributional impacts there. So that's basically what we have for the Western Gulf of Maine.
Thank you, Michelle. Clarifying questions from the council. Mike.
As I understood it, Michelle, you said there's very little fishing going on in the Western Gulf of Maine closure, Stellwagen, and so on. You mean bottom fishing, of course, but what about other forms of fishing, recreational, hook and line, and so on?
Yeah, so recreational would probably be one of the major types of fishing that is occurring in there. We haven't fully written that up yet. We've looked at it sort of in a preliminary way. I don't know if any of those figures on recreational fishing, I believe there are some actually in the document in the affected environment section that we put together that show you some recreational effort focused on the Western Gulf of Maine. There are other types of fishing that are exempted from the Western Gulf of Maine closure, but yeah, all the mobile gears wouldn't be fishing in there.
I presume commercial rod and reel in the large pelagic fishery is another one.
Is it? Yes.
Okay, so I don't think we can't lose sight of those impacts when we discuss this particular alternative.
Right, and then something we've heard a lot about is, you know, if you change what fishing is allowed in there, how that might affect current users of that area. So that's something we'll discuss to the extent that we can in the impact sections.
Are there any other clarifying questions from the council? Are there any questions from the audience? Patrick.
Hi, Michelle. Patrick Paquette, recreational advocate from Massachusetts. Besides the ability to look at data on the for hire fleet fishing in the Western Gulf of Maine closed area, do you actually have the ability to look at what the private, what private recreational anglers are doing there? I'm specifically concerned with Boston being the sixth most populated city in the nation and being a significant home to private vessels, and Mass Marine Trades believes that there's a significant part of those vessels are all about fishing for, and the most popular fish off our coast is groundfish. So do we have tools that we can get a gauge so that we can get some impact on the private vessels?
So I've asked my economist this morning, probably in response to a comment that you made, and the response was that we don't really have the spatial data from the recreational, private recreational, to be able to look at specifically which of these areas they fish within or not within. So I think we have some general sense of the magnitude of those fisheries, but we'd be hard-pressed to tell you which of these specific management areas they're fishing in versus not. I'm not the most familiar with recreational data of the folks here, so others may want to add to that. But.
And just a follow-up, if I might, Mr. Chair. Is part of this process interaction with Commonwealth of Massachusetts seeking data that they may have about, because I know they monitor their state waters, ground fishery, and where some of these areas in question here in these alternatives is right up, so I'm assuming that there's some way to gauge some split data with Commonwealth of Mass data.
So all of the habitat management areas are in federal waters. I don't know if there are trips that are happening simultaneously on both sides of the line. I would expect the answer is yes. We haven't really talked in any detail about sharing that kind of private recreational data with the state of Massachusetts.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions from the audience? Remember, you're going to have a chance to comment at the end of the meeting. Michelle, on to Georges Bank.
Thank you. So we have, there's five alternatives for Georges Bank, no action. And Georges Bank here, in this amendment is really just sort of east of the channel, and then west of the channel in southern New England, Nantucket Shoals is a separate subregion. For no action, we've got the closed area 1 and 2 closures, habitat and groundfish. And then there's the alternative 2, again, would be no habitat management areas. And 3, 4, and 5 are various combinations of different areas. So there's this northern edge area, which overlaps. Sorry, the zoom on these maps isn't the same, so it's hard to make a direct comparison. But this overlaps with much of the northern portion of the existing habitat closure. Alternative 4. Alternative 4 would include that northern edge area, and then also includes a gear modification area to the west, sort of in the region of Georgia Shoal. Alternative 5, so this is what happens when you rush, right? Alternative 5 would include this very large gear modification area across much of the northeastern portion of the bank, and then a small area as a mobile bottom 10-year gear closure. So unlike some of the alternatives we talked about in the Gulf of Maine, these gear modification areas and the mobile gear closure that's part of Alternative 5 sort of have very specific measures attached to them. So you could implement options 3 or 4 in these hatched areas and then either a mobile bottom 10-year gear closure or the mobile bottom 10-year gear closure with a clam dredge exemption in the southern green area. For these alternatives, there's quite a bit of information that was provided to you in terms of sea scallop resource and fishery impacts, potential impacts. So I would encourage you to look at those memos, and that information will be folded into the draft by the time you see it again at the next meeting. So, you know, and we'll also compare what we know about habitat vulnerability and sediment distribution because, you know, these areas are and many of these areas are currently closed, looking into projecting potential catch within these areas is something we'll need to continue to look at in terms of the economic impacts. But there's a lot of good information there in terms of potentially how this would shake out for scallop, the scallop resource and over the shorter and the longer term. So we can answer questions about that if people want to ask.
Questions for Michelle. Tom.
Thanks, Michelle. This was a focus, I think, if I recall correctly, at our last council meeting and after a communication from the agency about concerns with regards to the range of options in this part of the document. Has the PDT technical staff worked to address that? After that, I don't think we've actually changed any of the alternatives or expanded the range. Is that right?
That's correct. We did not expand the range in September, and the PDT and the closed area technical team haven't taken development of new alternatives any further because we were busy analyzing the alternatives that we already had.
Other questions? Any questions from the audience? Seeing none, we're on to Great South Channel.
So in this region, the no-action alternative is the existing lightship habitat closure, which is outlined in red on the left-hand panel, and the existing lightship groundfish closure. And we'll make sure to talk in no-action about, you know, potential access under the interim rule. But obviously, we don't have data yet for what people may catch or do in that area. Alternative 2 is no habitat management areas. And then alternatives 3, 4, 5, and 6 are really all very similar. They all have some areas in common, and it's really just the shape of the sort of channel Nantucket Shoals area that varies. Alternative 6 also has a gear modification area that would be further to the east. So I'll show you all those. So you can see that there's really a lot of overlap between them. And there are some, you know, major distinctions between the areas in terms of the types of fisheries that they encompass more or less. From things that we've looked at in some degree of detail, there's definitely a difference between the alternatives in terms of the extent to which they encompass sea scallop fishing. And so you can read about that more, especially in the memos that Deirdre put together on behalf of the scallop PDT. But there's definitely a lot more scallop resource in the Alternative 3 area, which is just an expanded, sort of eastern extended version of the Alternative 4 area, and then very little in either the Alternative 5 area or this left-hand area in Alternative 6. Alternative 6, similar to Georges Bank Alternative 5, the measures for these two areas are sort of fairly deliberately specified. There's like kind of less options, I guess, you could pick from. So this eastern hatched area would be a gear modification area where you'd have the ground cable modification options 3 or 4 that could apply. And then the area to the west would be a mobile gear closure, potentially with an exemption for hydraulic dredging. And the Cox Ledge areas with any of the 4 options are common to all of these different alternatives. So there's obviously quite a bit of fishing activity happening in some of these areas that you can read about in some of the tables in the economic section because they're, you know, fairly close to shore. We do have some uncertainty in terms of characterizing fish and substrate distributions when you move into sort of the western parts of the Nantucket Shoals area. They're a little bit difficult to survey, and so the impacts analysis will try and discuss some of the uncertainties that we have in terms of understanding the resources that occur in these areas. We do have quite a bit more information about different characteristics as you move further east. Those are
clarifying questions for Michelle from the council. Any clarifying questions from the audience? You have a question, Tom?
I guess just one thing I wanted to point out is that Michelle mentioned earlier that there's some issues that need to be clarified, and I don't know. There's one that relates to what happens upon implementation of the amendment. And Michelle, I'm not sure if you thought that should be brought up now at the end of the habitat management area discussion or if you wanted to wait until you had gone through all the other area alternatives. It seems like the HMA alternatives might have the most impact on that question, but not all of it.
Yeah, I think it would make sense maybe to talk about that now. So something that has come up, and the council has actually discussed this as well, is sort of what happens on or what should happen on day one when this amendment is implemented. If you have areas that currently are closed to particular fisheries, should they reopen to those fisheries right away? And for most fisheries, maybe the easy answer would be yes. For the sea scallop fishery we've talked about in particular is rotationally managed, and there's sort of a very detailed analysis that goes into how you want to harvest resource out of very specifically bounded areas. It may be more productive to not have areas just open, but rather to manage them as access areas sort of as soon as this amendment is implemented. Because the council has previously discussed developing any of those updated access measures in sort of an action that's moving alongside this one, probably the next sea scallop framework. The implementation dates of this action and that framework may not exactly line up. So the question is, what would the council's intent be in terms of what happens when this amendment is implemented? Does it make sense to hold off on allowing access for scallop fishery or any other fisheries, but probably the scallop fisheries, the one we're talking about, on day one until, updated access provisions can be implemented? So I think that this issue is, we talked about this a little bit. Deirdre covers this in her memo, document 7. At the very end, there's sort of a discussion of at least how the scallop PDT was thinking through these issues. I believe their recommendation was that you would get the most yield out of the scallop resource by managing these areas as access areas or sort of explicitly managing them.
Mary Beth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, we have discussed this at the scallop committee, and it was on our agenda for a recent meeting, and then somehow it slipped by at the end of the day. So I have a motion. It's not a committee motion. I think Karen probably has the motion, and I'll wait for her to bring it up. We are going to be doing a framework in 2014 that would make allocations to these areas, and the timing with our action today, they're likely to it's uncertain if we need this or not, but we can't predict what's going to happen in the future. So this would just clarify for everyone what the intent has been from a scallop perspective. And I'll read the motion into the record to clarify that all no-action EFH closed areas and areas within groundfish mortality closed areas that are not within a scallop access area remain closed to the scallop fishery, even if the council recommends they open in Habitat Omnibus Amendment 2. These areas should remain closed to the scallop fishery until the current access areas are modified by a future scallop fishery management action as a result of measures implemented in this amendment.
Is there a second to this motion?
Second.
Second by John Quinn. To go out to the audience. Drew.
Drew
Truman Cavis Fisher Survival Fund. Well, one, I like this motion because it actually talks about this coming to an end, and that's an exciting thought because maybe we actually will finish this amendment someday despite our lack of progress today. As for the only concern I have about this, I just want to get confirmation, is we've had problems in the past of changing habitat areas in a framework action before. Because we're putting this in an amendment, would that clear the way for that, or would that be a problem? But because you know what I'm talking about.
Mary Beth?
Just to add a little bit, because clearly this is a question for Jean. I mean, in the framework that we would be setting allocations for an area, we would not be and creating an access area, which we have done by framework before. We would not be changing any boundaries to any habitat closures. That the habitat closures would result from the amendment. We would keep that area that could become open to the scallop fishery closed until such time as a scallop framework would implement an allocation for the areas. I hope that makes that clearer.
All right, I didn't hear Drew's part of this. What was the...
My question was, in the past we've changed boundaries within a scallop framework for habitat areas, and that got us into trouble. And I want to make sure we don't repeat that mistake.
Well, I don't know if we've been tested on it since at the time that lawsuit was decided, we didn't have boundary changes in the framework as a frameworkable measure. Now, if you're able to put it in with some analysis up front as to what at this time as to what would happen if you change boundaries in at least a general conceptual way, I think we could change. And it's clear that we can change boundaries under a framework action. I think that we could do it and hopefully withstand a legal challenge if somebody wanted to. So it'd just be a matter of how upfront and the proposal is, and whether there's some preliminary analysis in general as to what it would mean to change boundaries in the future.
Follow up, Tom.
So, I'll tell you our take on it, and maybe Gene will tell us where all what or not. All the changes to the habitat areas are happening through an amendment to all the management plans, and we're not proposing changing any habitat management areas in a subsequent scallop action. We're proposing in a subsequent scallop action to modify the access areas, which we routinely, I think, have done, the timing anyway of the access areas, and I think we've created new access areas in frameworks before. So those two things are the same. So the only thing we're talking about doing, in essence, is trying to tie the implementation of the new habitat areas for the scallop fishery with a subsequent action that will modify the access areas. In essence, it's kind of an implementation link that we're proposing would be included in the amendment so that everybody understands what's going to happen when the scallop amendment gets implemented. I'm sorry, when the habitat amendment gets implemented. So we're not actually proposing changes to the habitat areas be made in a framework. That may be in the amendment, but that's not what this issue is related to. This issue is related to just syncing up when these habitat area changes become effective for the scallop fishery with a subsequent scallop action that designs the access areas to match up with it.
Right. So that subsequent action will tear off of the sort of expected syncing up in the habitat amendment, and it will sort of be reproposed at that particular time along with the scallop action. I think that's if that's the way it would work, it's fine.
I think that's the way it works.
Yeah, I think it's safer to sort of tee up again the syncing part in the council action
even though it was proposed originally in the Habitat Amendment, just to make sure that you get the most current public input on it.
So
I don't think you can make it automatic, though, based on the Habitat Amendment.
We may need to talk a little bit further, Gene, about how to accomplish this. We just wanted to make sure, or subject to whether the motion passes or not, we wanted to make sure what the council intended so we could, you know, work and write it up appropriately so we can get this.
Yeah, done. I mean, it conceptually sounds like it's okay from a legal perspective.
All right, that's a good discussion. I just have one concern in that there seems to be an assumption that anything that's opened up would just be an access area, but some of the areas that are opened up might actually be open bottom. Right. And that, so just so I didn't hear that in there, but that's understood that some of it's going to be open bottom, some of it's going to be access area. It depends on what we all decide is the right thing to do.
Right. Tom.
I'm trying to look at Deirdre here. I think we all agree that that could happen, but I think what the motion language says is that none of these new areas would open up until the scallop access framework is completed.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Back to the council. Comments on the motion on the board? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. Motion carries 16-0-0. Are there any further comments or questions on the habitat management component of this omnibus? Okay. Tom.
Terry, yeah, I'm not sure whether or when you want to come back to addressing the issue with regards to the range of alternatives in the eastern area. Did you want to finish up with questions and then bring motions or discuss that issue? Because I think we need to before we move on, but at your discretion.
Is this specific to the habitat management areas?
Yeah, yep.
Okay, are you talking about the eastern Gulf of Maine, or are you talking about the... Eastern Georgia. Now, why don't you do it now?
Well, I guess this issue first came up, most recently at one of our last council discussions, and that was the letter from the agency highlighting that there are concerns with regards to the range of alternatives in this part of the document. Since that time, we haven't expanded that range. So I think we should probably discuss doing that. As I look at the alternatives in the document, I'm a little bit concerned that we don't have one that's driven by the SASE tool that we created and spent 5 or 6 years honing, and that a lot of us think should, at least in part, be informing some of our habitat decisions. So in terms of forwarding the goals of this action and creating a range of alternatives that actually improve habitat management, I'd move to include and consider an alternative for a habitat management area that would include the existing COD HAPC and extend that area west to the 6730 line. If I get a second, I'm happy to provide rationale.
Yeah. Before I ask for a second, Michelle, is this a measure that you can incorporate into the document by the next time we meet in January?
Can I incorporate it in the document or analyze it in the document? Particularly the groundfish and the economic impacts, and to some extent the seabed impacts, are sort of evaluated in part by overlaying different habitat management alternatives on top of different data layers and summarizing that information and discussing it. So I think we'd want to identify how we want to prioritize further development of the document before January. I think we could definitely give you some information about any new alternatives. That's going to come at the expense of probably further development of analysis of existing alternatives. I don't think we could complete all the things we discussed earlier and analyze new alternatives and hope to have that all for a council meeting mailing in January.
So I'm hearing a fuzzy yes. And Matt, you're going to second it. Okay. Tom.
Well, as I've talked with people out here and as folks that that I know and who have fished out here talk about these alternatives, I think the thing that jumps off the page is, you know, we have quite a range of alternatives that don't protect what in a lot of people's minds is the most important cod bottom on Georgia's bank and the best habitat measure, arguably, that this council's ever put in place, and that's the HAPC. And I think there's, based on the Sassy Lisa clusters and some of the information we've gotten about the bottom out there, I think there's a pretty strong and compelling argument to pull that line into the west and protect more. The goal of this action is to improve habitat protections, and I think if we're serious about improving and the status of codfish on Georgia's, this is something that we have to take a hard look at. Maybe people don't support it in final action, but I think it needs to be analyzed in the document, and it addresses the gap, I think, that the agency identified in terms of the range of alternatives in this part of the document.
I'm going to go out to the audience first. Any comments to Drew?
Drew Minkiewicz, Fishery Survival Fund. One, with all due respect to the agency, we disagree with their analysis that you don't have a broad range of alternatives right now. What you have on Georgia's Bank is just as broad as any other area, Eastern Gulf of Maine, Central Gulf of Maine, Western Gulf of Maine, Gray South Channel. There's, you know, quite a series of options that you can work from, so we're quite perplexed by that analysis. Two, this doesn't actually really line up with the Lisa cluster analysis. It's kind of being done ad hoc at the last bit here, and if you actually look at it, you wouldn't include just the HABC. It would be the Lisa cluster. If you really want to go after those, it's all further to the west, period, and further to this. Using a rationale to protect cod habitat is interesting in that there is not a single juvenile cod hotspot within this area that's being identified by this proposed alternative. So you're going to do something in the name of cod that has no identified cod hotspots within it. Also, I question what the actual shape of this would be, because the cod HAPC, as we all know, is irregularly shaped. Is it going to follow directly out to the west and include the very deep water that's off the bank? And obviously, that's an area that's important to a lot of fisheries, and I'm sure they'll have something to say about that. Or is it just going to follow the bank, so it doesn't really identify what the actual area would be? I think this is a very poor way to go about trying to manage this amendment. We've had these debates about this area. We've had many debates about this area, and we've ended up where we've ended up. It's trying really to, you know, relitigate something that's already been litigated and decided. And as I said, there are plenty of options in this area. I don't think you need this at all. Thank you.
Greg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Greg Cunningham with the Conservation Law Foundation. There pretty clearly is a lack of adequate alternatives on Georgia's Bank, and the staff's comments in the decision document, I think, bear that out. Other than the no-action alternative, the best that can be said about the one area that's proposed that appears to have some legal merit is that it will, quote, maintain some amount of habitat protection on Georgia's Bank. The goal of the Omnibus Habitat Amendment is not to obtain some or maintain some habitat. It is to protect to the extent practicable. And all of the alternatives right now result in substantial reductions in existing protected EFH. There needs to be some additional alternative, meaningful alternative, on Georgia's Bank that will obtain habitat protection And as it is right now, there are gear modification proposals, which staff is very clear in indicating will not have a habitat protection function. There are alternatives for no management areas whatsoever, which clearly will not meet the objectives and goals of the amendment. So CLF supports inclusion of this in the amendment and further analysis of it. If I understand the location of this, it is fairly consistent with a previously analyzed Northern Edge combined alternative that was rejected by the council a couple of meetings ago. So I believe there is a fair amount of analysis already relative to this area, and I would hope that that would speed the process up. Thank you.
Yeah, come on up, Erica. Sarah.
Thank you. Sarah Smith with Environmental Defense Fund. I just want to agree with pretty much everything that Greg just said. We submitted a letter to the council earlier basically suggesting that we felt the alternatives on Georges Bank are, as the document is written, are not sufficient, particularly with regards to the goal of enhancing groundfish productivity. And as John Bullard pointed out earlier, it will be important for the DEIS to state clearly which of the alternatives that are in the document do and do not meet these goals. So I think having an extended range of alternatives is certainly benefits this document and this process. And I think including further analysis of this particular area will greatly improve the range of alternatives. And as Greg said, this is, from what I understand, this is not an entirely new area. This is an area that's been debated to some extent and has some analysis attached to it. So from the perspective of the goal of enhancing groundfish productivity, I think that this is definitely a step in the right direction towards improving the alternatives that we have on Georges Bank. Thank you.
Vito.
You know, alternatives are fine at this point, but I just want to remind folks that this late in the process, there was a lot of work done with fishermen that fished Georges Bank, and there hasn't been a serious discussion about this particular area. One of the things that the HAPC does is it cuts off the northern edge, and, you know, that's a concern. So I think if this was brought up a lot earlier in the process, there would have been discussion about creating that alley and that access on the edge. It's one of our biggest problems with access in Haddock in any kind of equal standing with the Canadians in the sharing agreement. It's our loss of the northern edge. Biggest part of the northeast peak is gone, is on the other side of the Hague line. And pieces that we do have, we have locked off with closed area two. Contained within that is the HAPC, which also locks off the edge. So not the whole area, but just a piece of it. So I think if there was a discussion about modifying an option for Eastern Georges that included that HAPC area, we would have been, our way in would have been to create at least some, really look at that Eastern Edge portion of it and allow vessels to be able to move along the Hague line freely, which is one of the results of this amendment that we're looking for additional access to Haddock. So just wanted to, not against the idea of adding an option, but I just think at this stage, be mindful that industry has not had a chance to talk about weighing in on how we would have the more important access that we need at the Hague line.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, I've got a lot of hands. Terry, Mike, David, John, and David, and probably everybody else. Start with Terry.
Yeah, a couple questions. One for Michelle. How far to the west does the HAPC current one go now? And while you're finding that out, I'll ask Tom my question. Would that include, as gear modifications, would that, if this motion passed, would that include the gear modifications that we have in all the rest of the things now?
My understanding is throughout the document, the several options apply to these habitat management areas. I mean, where we shake out on that is probably for later on, but my understanding is that those all options apply to each. My preference is that this area is given the highest priority and the most protections, but as a habitat management alternative in this part of the document, I think the same alternatives or management measures in there would apply. I will say again, my strong preference is that we have the highest possible level of protections from for this area. The western line of that existing HAPC, I think, is 6720.
This is 6730 here. And then this sort of shading, sorry, it shows up better on my screen, is the existing habitat closure, also the existing HAPC. So extending it directly to the west would also encompass this area. This underlying area is an area that we analyzed previously called Georgia Shoal East. A lot of the analyses we've done more recently that went into the DEIS have not been done for this Georgia Shoal East area, so it would be a bit of work to analyze this boundary or something similar to it. But
Tom?
My thought on this, and, you know, in terms of getting it analyzed, is to try to get the smallest effective piece of bottom. And this movement to the west allows us to pick up a significant fraction of things that lit up under the SASE analysis without a whole bunch of extra stuff. Knowing that if we vote this up and put it in the document, we can tweak lines around, based on public input and based on the analysis. But my sense is, and my intention is, to get this alternative in the document that takes the existing HAPC and bumps it out a little bit to pick up a little bit more of the bottom that lit up under the SASE analysis and thereby create the sort of minimum effective dose that gets to the goal of the amendment of improving the protections out there.
Mike.
Yes, I'm quite sympathetic to Tom's intent here. I can't say I can judge exactly whether this is exactly the right area or not, but the intent as he's described it is one I'm very sympathetic towards. I also heard Vito's comments about, again, possibility with public input there'll be a need for some refinement. I don't think this is a matter of the whether we have a broad enough range of alternatives. As I see it, we have a very broad. Is do we have enough diversity of alternatives? That is, things in this case, sort of in the middle range that are viable options. And for that reason, I would support this proposal with the understanding that with public comment, there may need to be some refinement.
John Bullard.
We, as was referenced, had submitted an alternative. And it wasn't because we didn't think there was a broad enough range. It was because we thought there needed to be really a compromise that would protect habitat on the northern edge and also allow access to the scallops that were up there. And my recollection was that our attempt to provide that compromise option fell short by one vote. And I wish I could have persuaded the maker of the motion that was a good option, because it would be included in there right now, and we'd have that alternative. It was born of a worry that without that option, there would be realistically no protection on the northern edge, because the desire to get access to an awful lot of scallops would win the day. And so we fell short on that. And so that's why we offered that, and it did fall short. So I thought it was a reasonable compromise. It was a smaller area than what you see in alternative three, but it wasn't because we didn't have a lot of options. It was because we thought we needed a compromise solution. That's why we offered it, and it fell short.
John Quinn.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate everybody's input. I'm opposed to this motion, really for one reason. We had a healthy discussion this morning about how many holes are in this document, and we've tasked the staff to go back over the holidays and keep our fingers crossed and make sure that this document's ready in January for us to move it forward, and not going to go back over that discussion. But now we're trying to put additional analysis on the staff to do and keep our fingers crossed that they can do everything we told them to do this morning and now some more afternoon add-ons. While it's a technically allowed at this 11th hour to put this in, I think in the spirit of trying to move this thing forward and all the discussion this morning, I think this should be rejected. This was voted on and discussed at length at a prior council meeting. John Buller just recounted that, and I think we ought to let that vote stand.
Dave Preble.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I like particularly the way Mike put it. We have broad options, kind of. I was trying to think of a word to describe what we didn't have, and he described it perfectly with diversity. We do not have a diversity of that I think we should have in here. That's the first point. Second point is that we don't have a proper alternative that's driven by SASE. The SASE model, under our original goals and objectives, was put together over a period of several years. It was peer-reviewed several times by competent and very rigorous peer reviews, and was considered to be a state-of-the-art tool. And we used that, and this particular area lit up very brightly in the SASE model. So to take out all possibility of using science in this part of George's Bank for at least one alternative is just simply not acceptable. As far as I'm concerned, the other options, are they broad? Not really. Take out a couple of those. I'm fine with that. But we need to keep this one in for the diversity, as Mike pointed out, the diversity of options. As far as Vito's point is concerned, I am thoroughly in agreement with him on that. His idea of what he called an alley on the edge of the Hague line. When I first got on the council, my very first meeting, I made a motion to create a 10-mile alley adjacent to the Hague line. It was really, you know, it was like tilting at windmills, and I knew it at the time, but I just wanted to lay out there how important I believe that to be. And in subsequent years, I've come to agree even more on that point. So I think that we could easily design or devise some kind of an alteration in the or a variation in the eastern boundary in order to accommodate that. I thoroughly agree with him. Access is needed there by the New England fishermen. So with that in mind, I thoroughly support Tom's motion, and I'd like to see as it progresses an access alley on that side of the Hague line. Thank you.
As long as you don't want that design between now and January. David Pierce.
The motion is a good one, and I'm influenced by, again, the document provided to us by Michelle, and that's on page 17 of the decision document that we're not really using at this point in time, but still it's got a lot of interesting information, such as on that page, the fifth bullet down, where it highlights the reasons why this particular option should be considered by us. At least that's my take. That's my read of it. I won't read the language that's in that bullet. I'll only say that I'll support the motion because the rationale for it is already provided for us in seabed habitat considerations in the decision document on page 17.
Mary Beth?
I can't support the motion for all the reasons that John just highlighted. I mean, I'd hoped we'd choose preferred alternatives today, and instead we're adding things to the document. So everybody's, justification of why we couldn't choose preferred alternatives was that the document's not ready to go. Now in the afternoon we're going to add things to it, and all those items that Matt had laid out as being essential before we make preferred alternatives, the staff is saying they might not be able to do it if we do this. I do appreciate the fact that the agency came forward with a compromise alternative. We did put that before the Scallop AP and let them have a full discussion of it, and they did not feel that the analysis was used correctly in outlining the boundaries. And if there had been more time, perhaps we could have, tried to work with that and fix it. But this council said, no, we're not adding any more alternatives after this, and now here it is more than a month later, and we're adding an alternative. It just, we had somebody from the public say, he was happy with the previous motion because it seems like we're actually moving towards the goalpost here. And this is adding in an alternative at this point is definitely taking two steps back again.
Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to support this motion. I think it's the right thing to do for all the reasons that have come before us, including Dr. Sissonwine's characterization of breadth versus diversity. But I also want to point out, too, that in addition to the SASE seabed analysis, the proposed area also covers an intense area of spawning cod, and that's another option that we need to consider in this amendment, that there's strong populations of recapture bait, and I'm looking at page 542 of the volume 5 appendices, the DEIS volume 5. Let me just make sure I got that page right. Excuse me. Yeah, it's May 2013, the TALIC reproduction of the TALIC 2008 spawning recapture image. There's a lot of spawning cod up here. For 2 days, we've talked about how to get more cod and how cod is constraining people's ability to fish and how it's constraining people's ability to get the quotas that are healthy, namely the Eastern Georges Bank haddock. So I'm supporting this motion not just for the Lisa Sassy analysis, but also for its effect on enhancing juvenile groundfish spawning. Thank you.
Is there anybody who has not spoken yet? Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I won't take a position on the motion since I can't vote, but in support of the motion, I heard someone from the audience say that the gear modification options for the Georges Bank area don't protect habitat. Michelle, could you help me with that statement? I know you didn't make it, but that's resonating in my mind, and I guess I'd like to understand why that was stated as such.
So you're talking about a statement in the decision document under this section?
No, somebody in the audience said, the gear modifications areas don't protect habitat, but don't they close the area to mobile bottom tending gear, except hydraulic clam dredges?
Right.
So how does that not protect habitat, I wonder?
So the hatched gear modification areas.
Yep.
So this area in alternative 4, this large area in alternative 5,
yep,
would be proposed as areas where you'd have to modify your ground cables. You would still be able to use trawl gear in there, you would still be able to use dredges throughout those areas, with the exception of this mobile bottom tending gear closure area in Alternative 5. And in working through the information we have on this, the PDT has discussed that it's uncertain what the net seabed impact is of requiring those modified gears as compared to gears that people are currently using. So that's where the uncertainty in terms of the net impacts or benefits comes in. And, you know, we know that some of the seabed types that were within these habitat management areas do have a fairly lengthy recovery time following impact. And so there's a concern that, you know, sort of any level of impact is potentially problematic. And by only requiring the gear modifications, you're not actually displacing that type of effort off of these areas. You're just maybe adjusting sort of the use of the gear and changing areas swept.
Thanks for reminding me where we are on that. But if I'm looking on page 17 of the decision document, and maybe the list of four things isn't completely accurate, because it says closed to mobile bottom tending gear, and then it says maximum ground cable length. So it's really closed about mobile bottom tending gear with ground cable length of less than or greater than 45 fathoms, I guess. That's what confused me. If somebody could help me, I apologize. I mean, I was on the AP, and I've been lost for about 5 years, so still am.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask that you take that question offline with Michelle.
All right, thank you.
I've got Terry and Mary Beth, and then we're going to move this motion.
Yeah, I got thinking listening to people say how it's protecting cod. So I happened to bring my papers from our April 17th Habitat Committee meeting, and nowhere in that cod HAPC does it light up with cod, according to the Habitat papers. So, I mean, if we're doing this to protect cod, then we want to move it to the east about 40 miles. On the Canadian side, not on our side. And I just can't support this to protect cod when our own paper that our staff has produced for us says it's not there. So, April 17th, page 81. If you want to take a look at it.
Mary Beth.
Yeah, just very quickly, because it's not directly related to the motion, but more the comments on the gear modifications. And on the bottom of page 17, it says that limitations on ground cable length would provide no habitat benefits since bottom trawling would continue, and the effects of the ground cable adjustments on total seabed contact are very uncertain. And I think that statement is incorrect, and I would recommend that the PDT look at that statement and reconsider it, because it is true that using the modified gear with discs has not been fully researched in this region, but there have been two different pilots that have gone on, both inshore and offshore, and that this particular gear modification has been implemented as a measure to minimize impacts on habitat in the Bering Sea and approved by the agency, and you have a whole fleet of vessels who are using it in the Bering Sea. That's a different place. I get that. But to go from, you know, okay, well, we're a different region and we need to do more work, to saying no habitat benefits, that's incorrect. It's fully researched, papers written, published, work by the agency in cooperation with the industry, and personally, I'm very familiar with it. We have three boats utilizing it today, and I think the PDT needs to rethink it. I mean, that's misleading to the public, in my opinion, and should change.
Okay. Motion on the board. Those support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? Yeah, the motion carries 9-7. Terry.
Well, then if we're going to add alternatives, then I would like to put a motion up that would create that alley along the edge of the Hague line to be analyzed. And so we'd have that to work with when we... say a 8-mile wide alley on the edge of the Hague line. Give us some access to the Haddock over there. So.
You seconding it, Tom?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to take very, very limited comment on this, Tom, after Tom.
I'm just asking for clarification of what you mean, Terry.
West of the HAPC, I guess.
You mean on the east side of the HAPC, lop off 8 miles between the HAPC and the Hague line?
Yes.
Parallel to the Hague line.
And go to right down the Hague line, an 8 mile swath, if that area doesn't open.
Okay. I'm getting a little. I started out, I knew what you meant. Now it's not clear to me what you mean. You know, I thought initially, I want to make sure that the staff knows what they're looking at here. You know, initially I thought you meant just take, you know, lop 8 miles off the east side of the HAPC if that area doesn't open.
Yes.
But you could interpret that to mean take any area that's being considered that bumps up against the Hague line and lop 8 miles off of it, which is dramatically changing all of our alternatives that we've considered so far.
Okay, then just the east side of the HAPC? Does that seem reasonable?
I just want to make sure I know what you mean.
Because the rest of it's going to open anyway, isn't it? Yeah, okay. Yes.
Well, okay. So the reason I'm asking the question is because we haven't taken out the northern edge alternative, right, which bumps up against the Hague line. So now if you start talking about putting an 8 mile alley on that one, we're really dramatically starting to change all of it. I don't know if it's any more dramatic than the earlier change, but we're dramatically changing alternatives here.
Just this alternative, then.
Okay.
Okay. How's that?
And you're good with that, Tom?
Yeah, and I think because of the similarity with the previous motion, the analysis will overlap, obviously, significantly. And I think people raise a good point. If this were to pass, you'd have some access the entire Hague line. I think that's worth thinking about.
Jim.
Yeah, Jim Odlin, Portland, Maine. I didn't speak to the previous motion, but I really have a problem, even though I may support this particular motion, that you're adding stuff to a document that was supposed to go out the door today, and it wasn't going out the door because you didn't have proper analysis. Now, the previous motion, I think I heard people say that there'll be opportunities to adjust that, the lines in that previous motion, and I just... Before I comment on this one, I'd like to know, when is that opportunity going to be? In the public comment period? And then if people decide that we need to make a pretty big adjustment to that, to the lines in that, when is that analyzed? So I think you're, I think there's something wrong here, adding this stuff like this at a meeting that was going to be just a fine-tuning of a document. You're putting in major closures. Because in that previous line, there's a huge area in that area that doesn't light up for anything that should be cropped off. And it's not the 8 mile line, it's the area in the deep water up there. So I guess where we are today, my question is, as I said before, when will the public be able to have impact on these lines prior to the analysis? And then if it's not going to be done, then how do we impact that? You're going to go back out for analysis if there's a change to the line? I see there's some process problems here. Having said that, then obviously I would support this particular motion, but I just think it's a mistake going in this direction. So I'm stuck. I don't know what to do on this motion other than say I kind of support the intent of this motion, but because of the previous motion, I don't support the direction that you're going in. I think this was discussed many times, these type of things, in the committee and by the council, and now you're adding it without the opportunity, you know, just seeing a line on a chart and people are supposed to comment on it. It's very difficult from this side to do that. So again, I reluctantly, I guess, support this option, but I just think you're going in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Tom? Nice.
I guess I want to ask Michelle two questions here. The first one is, are you clear on what the alternative is being proposed here?
So I think that this would, we would analyze the previous motion and then a version of the previous motion that removes the eastern 8 miles.
We're confused whether this 8 mile alley is supposed to be an alternative or whether this 8 mile alley is the alternative or sub option rather. I'm not getting clear direction from.
I'm sorry, Tom was sidebarring with me. So, what did you say to me, Tom?
I guess Michelle and I are a little confused whether this 8 mile alley changes the option or is considered, you know, like a variation of the option that was voted earlier.
I think it's just a variation of it, and because Tom and I were just talking, and he said we'd have the economic benefit of knowing how much money we could actually produce in that alley at that same time. So, Matt wrapped up in the option before. So, does that make sense or no? Or maybe I wasn't clear. Maybe Tom could enlighten us.
No, before this, we're still comments from the audience. Anybody else from the audience want to comment? Mike, Cicilline, Tom, Mary Beth, Dave Preble.
Yes, I could see this as another alternative. That is, we added an alternative with our previous vote, and this would be a slightly different alternative that would be the same as the other, and except it would create this alley. If we're concerned about just adding so many alternatives, adding multiple alternatives at this stage, we could essentially, in effect, be amending our previous alternative by simply making the new alternative from this discussion of the last hour, the one that was voted on just a moment ago with the modification of adding the 8 mile strip. That would get us to only one more alternative to be analyzed. If there's strong support for having this 8 mile strip, and I thought the comments I heard were pretty good, I would think that would be a more efficient way to go forward in terms of the staff analysis. So I suggest that we could wordsmith some motion to that effect if people think it's a worthwhile way forward.
Mary Beth.
The interpretation that this is an additional alternative, I mean, it's bad enough having one. And actually, when he made this motion, I thought I could support it. But if it adds another alternative, so we're now adding two, then I definitely could not support it, even though it has value. So I agree with Mike, and I'm hoping that what we're really talking about here is one alternative, not two alternatives or sub-options, because that's really an additional alternative, and that we're just talking about one thing here.
Okay, Dave Preble, are you going to fix this?
I agree completely with both of the last two people. In fact, I was going to say something similar to what Mike said. I would treat this as simply modifying the original alternative. I don't see any point in creating two alternatives out of this. It makes no sense at all. And it seems to me that all these intelligent people around here should be able to figure out some way of making this just simply a part of the original motion, however that is done procedurally.
Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mike on this. This seems to be a logical option to the previous motion we've passed. I think the creating as a separate alternative, I share the concerns folks have. I think given the analytical requirements, and Michelle would certainly be able to inform this, it seems that making this an option for the previous motion might be a nice compromise that allows both alternatives to go, both choices to go forward, and without bogging down staff time.
Tom.
Yeah, I'd support this as a sub option. I think the analysis is effectively the same. There's almost, I mean, there's almost no marginal increase in the analysis, and the potential for getting that side-by-side comparison of what it would mean to have this alleyway would be significant. I mean, I just don't see it as a monumental undertaking to compare these things, and I think it would show us that there's some value to an approach like this. So I support the motion as written. I think we can get it done. I think we should move it forward. It's a good idea.
Doug.
I'd like to hear from Michelle and staff as to whether this is a marginal increase to have two new options added to this and what the impact that would be on us getting the essential items that we originally asked for by January.
So having two options is that are similar like this is definitely less work than two completely distinct alternatives, but it's still a reasonably substantial increase in work over just having one of them, because any of the economics or seabed habitat type or groundfish hotspot tables need to be summarized with respect to both of them and discussed with respect to both of them. So it's, you know, it would represent additional work. And having analyzed this alternative, I'd be concerned about getting other things done. If I could, while I have the floor, I'd like to just point out that the relative sort of size and scale of some of these areas, and I haven't, you know, fully done this in GIS, but the top boundary of the HAPC is roughly 8 nautical miles. So an alley that is 8 miles wide would pretty much be east of here, which is a fairly significant fraction of the existing area. So as long as the council is clear that that's what that would look like.
Okay, is everybody clear what we're voting on? As clear as possible. John.
So are we voting that we're adding one alternative that adds Tom's and subtracts Terry's? That's one alternative we end up if this passes?
No, my understanding is that we're adding a second alternative. So we've added one, and now we're adding a second one.
So there'd be two things.
Correct. Mary Beth.
So I would make a motion to amend, and that would be to add the alternative, not as a sub-option, but to replace the boundaries from the previous motion with this alley, and that we're adding one alternative to the document.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Tom, we're going to take two comments in favor, two comments opposed, and then we're going to vote.
I don't support the motion to amend. I think that image right there tells you what you need to know. We wanted to see, we just voted to see the analysis on the alternative that we just passed 15 minutes ago. So I still want to see that analysis. I think this is an interesting idea, you know, in terms of a sub-option. I can support it as a sub-option. As staff said, these things overlap quite a bit. I'd like to see them side by side. I think, in fact, any highway approach along the Hague Line is going to pop out in terms of its potential impacts and benefits by this side-by-side comparison, and not having the original option evaluated, we're going to lose that ability. We're going to lose the ability to see what the benefits of that that sliver really are economically and what the trade-offs are. So I support the motion. I oppose the motion to amend. I support the underlying motion. This can get done, and I think a wide range of options here is exactly what we need. I don't see why we need to swap one out for the other. I think there's value in looking at both.
In favor. Opposed. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michelle, I want to thank you for putting the scale up on the map. If you could go back to the previous image that you had of the SASE, and I don't know if it's possible to approximate the 8 mile corridor that you put in the when you switched over, but we're back into the same problem we had in the first place if we approve this. I will admit that I wasn't fully aware of the scale when I spoke previously, but that right there tells me that this is not a good way to go forward. I will not support the motion to substitute. I'm not sure we can make a motion to substitute a motion to amend that hasn't been voted on, if I'm following this correctly, but I'm not going to support either of them. I think we're chopping off habitat again, and this amendment is about us protecting habitat, so I will be opposed to both.
PK, in favor or against?
I'm against.
Okay. Just be quick.
Yeah, no, just quickly. I mean, I agree with Tom. I didn't want to make the first motion. I didn't vote on the first motion to pass. But I do agree with Tom. Now that the first motion passed, I'd like to see the whole thing.
Okay. On the motion to substitute, to replace the alternative added by motion 3 with the alternative described in motion 4. Is everyone clear? Those in favor of the motion to substitute, please indicate so. And those opposed. The motion fails 2-14. We're back to, I don't even know what we're back to. The underlying motion, which was to add a sub-option to the alternative, that would add it above, that would allow an 8 mile wide alley that would be open to fishing along the Hague Line. Gene, I just want to get a legal response from you. Is this kosher? Yeah, adding a sub option to a previous motion. Okay, just want to double sure. Okay. To the underlying motion, those who support the underlying motion, please indicate so. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And those opposed. And those abstaining. The motion carries 9-5-2. Okay, everyone, are we actually done with this section? Are there any more? Is there any more discussion on the? Seeing none, we're on to the spawning management alternatives.
I can maybe talk about all of them together, and then we could take comments. So they're broken down into Gulf of Maine and Georges Bank. Basically, you've got the no-action alternative, which is comprised of the year-round groundfish closures for both regions, and then also some seasonal areas. So in the Gulf of Maine, you've got the year-round caches and Western Gulf of Maine groundfish closures, the various sector rolling closures in the spring, the common pool rolling closures in the spring, and there's a fall area, winter, fall, winter area. And then there's also the Gulf of Maine cod spawning protection area, which you also know as the whaleback. That's part of no action. The action alternative is a subset of these areas, plus an additional new area in Massachusetts Bay. So it would just keep the sector rolling closures. The way it's written up now is with the existing exemptions to those closures, and that may be something that the council wants to confirm that is their intent, plus the Gulf of Maine cod spawning protection area as it exists now, and this new Massachusetts Bay spawning area, and that would have the same restrictions associated with it as the whaleback area. There are some maps in the associated with the decision document companion map piece that we could bring up if we needed to during the discussion. On Georges Bank, there's also a no-action alternative that consists of the year-round groundfish closures. And there's also a May seasonal closed area that covers much of the bank in between closed areas 1 and 2 that applies to just a few vessels currently. And then there's alternatives 2 and 3, which are very similar. Alternative 2 would include closed area 1, all of closed area 1, and then also closed area 2, and those would be closed to various gears that can catch ground fish with some exemptions to that in February, March, and April. So the gears we're talking about are outlined in section 2.3 of the, or sorry, 2.2 of volume 3. And then alternative 3 would be very similar, but would be just the northern part of closed area 1, so the northern part of the habitat, the northern habitat closure in closed area 1, and closed area 2 also during February, March, and April. So I can bring up those maps while you guys are talking.
Any questions from the council? Ellen.
I had a problem with the wording on the spawning closures. You know, we've seen changes in the spawning times, and with the temperature changes and the regime change, I'm very concerned that if those, either one of those pass, we are stuck with spawning closures February, March, and April, and it gives us no flexibility to determine whether spawning is occurring. Is that true? So if spawning starts beginning the middle of March and goes through June, we'll be able to open it up during it will open up automatically during June, and spawning is still occurring. It's just a question. Am I reading this wrong?
I don't think so. That the alternatives are specified as 6 seasons for now. Clearly, the council could adjust those seasons in a future action if they're found to be inappropriate later. But right now, it would be February, March, and April, not sort of triggered annually by some specific criteria or whatever.
Other questions for Michelle from the council? Any questions from the audience? Michelle, under your other considerations and issues, there's at least one, maybe two issues that we should probably discuss under this section.
Sure. So there's a few different things. Some of these relate to, I guess, the no-action habitat alternatives as well, because you're talking about things that relate to the existing groundfish closures. But we talked about, the staff discussed that there are some special access programs in the multi-species plan that are associated with these areas. And if they're made seasonal or removed in some way from being year-round areas, then some of these programs may become unnecessary or moot. So that may be something that the council would take up in a trailing action to the groundfish plan to amend or adjust some of those special access programs. We also discussed, and Andy worked on this some, the relationship between different exemption areas and the year-round closures. For example, some of the small mesh exemption areas sort of abut the existing closures. It might be appropriate to reconsider their boundaries if the year-round closures weren't providing a constraint any longer. So that would be another topic that could come up in a trailing action. There's monitoring issues that are associated with some of these year-round closures. The one that we came up with was in the herring fishery. I know the council talked about herring monitoring at the last meeting. I wasn't there. I was listening a bit. But there's some monitoring requirements that are, if you are fishing for herring, say, in closed area 1, and eliminating closed area 1 except seasonally, you don't any longer have that boundary within which to apply monitoring. So that may be something to consider. Maybe this will get taken care of already anyway in herring. And then finally, just to emphasize again, the the way that the action alternative fishing restrictions are written up for both the Gulf of Maine and the Georges Bank spawning alternatives is sort of adopting the existing restrictions and exemptions. There may be gears on the list of exemptions that do have impacts on groundfish spawning activity. It may not necessarily be because they catch a lot of groundfish. It may be sort of impacts disturbance of the spawning activity itself. I think Andy could probably speak a little bit better to that and to any analysis that's been done to date that supports that. But all of the measures that would apply in these areas are detailed in Section 2 of the draft. So these actually start... The Gulf of Maine alternatives are on page 81 and 82 of Volume 3, and then the Georges Bank, what would be exempted, is on page 87 and 88 of Volume 3. So.
Is there any discussion on the issues that Michelle just raised? Mary Beth?
So I think it's good to understand what the impacts of... what this action might be on other programs and such, but a lot of this, like special access programs, were created specifically because we had all these large closures, and if we make adjustments to them, and in particular the mortality closures. And as was pointed out, should we want to do something, we would need to do it in a trailing action. I mean, I don't think that we want to be adjusting boundaries for some things at this point. I mean, I'm asking people to please not add any more stuff to this amendment.
Other comments? John.
I have a comment. I don't know whether this is the right time, but just in terms of thinking about January and making decisions on a preferred alternative and how we might go about doing that, first of all, Michelle and whoever else contributed to this document, I just think you've done a really terrific job in making something that's incredibly complex understandable to us. There's an enormous amount of material here, and this is really very well organized. I think that, as I said in earlier remarks, one of the things that I'm going to focus on in thinking about the many potential combinations is, does a plan that we come up with meet our own goals and objectives? And I think that this was presented today. Eastern Gulf of Maine, Central Gulf of Maine, Western Gulf of Maine, so on. I wonder what is the most helpful order to figure this out when we are thinking about a preferred alternative. I think the order that we go through this in can make this easier or harder. And starting with Eastern Gulf of Maine isn't necessarily the best way to do that. Starting with Western Gulf of Maine may, in fact, be the best place to start. It may be the toughest, the most potential options. And figuring that out and saying, okay, here's where we are in the Western Gulf of Maine, and then when we know where that is, moving in an easterly direction in the Gulf of Maine, it narrows up the choices. At any rate, I don't have the answer on that, but I think the order in which we proceed in that decision-making document may make this easier or harder on how we do that. So it's just a suggestion in how the decision-making document is done for us in January. That may make this task easier or harder, the order in which we do this. And the other thing is, at least speaking as one person, I think as we put various combinations together, I know I'm always going to be thinking, well, does this combination plate meet goals and objectives? And so trying to figure out the answer to that question is another question. I know it's a question I'll be asking all the time.
Yeah, thanks, John. For better or worse, today's a great trial run. And I mentioned earlier this morning that no matter which way the morning vote went, this was going to be an educational process for all of us. And I think, you know, we're going to have to reconnoiter after today with Habitat chair and staff and figure out a game plan for January. But staying on track where we are right now, are there any further comments on the groundfish spawning component of this document? Okay, seeing none. The next issue to tackle is going to be the dedicated habitat research area alternatives. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, so let's take a short break. Michelle, you all set? Okay, council members and audience, we're going to start our section on the dedicated habitat research areas.
All right, this is section 2.3 of volume 3 describes these different alternatives. There's five. No action for dedicated habitat research areas is just to not designate any DHRAs. We don't currently have any DHRAs, so that would continue that. And then the council could select from some combination of alternatives 2, 3, and 4, which is the Eastern Maine, Stellwagen, and Georges Bank DHRAs. So you could pick one, you could pick three, you could pick two in any combination. And then if one of those alternatives is selected, the council may want to endorse the sunset provision alternative, and that basically sets up an administrative review mechanism to look at what's happening in the DHRAs and, you know, do the activities meet certain use criteria. And then after 3 years, if the areas aren't either being actively used to meet sort of specified research agenda or imminently it's going to be used, there's already funding in place or things like that. There's all those criteria detailed in the document. Then the DHRA might be removed. So just to show you where these areas are, they overlap with other areas that have already come up today. The Eastern Maine DHRA would overlap exactly the small Eastern Maine habitat management area. As a DHRA, the management measure would be that it would be close to mobile bottom tending gear. If you remember, as a habitat management area, it could have those gear modification options, maybe an exemption for hydraulic dredges. But the DHRA would be more restrictive, and if the DHRA were implemented, the more restrictive criteria would take precedence, at least for the duration of the DHRA. Alternative 3 under the DHRA section is the Stellwagen DHRA. This is the same as the Stellwagen Large Habitat Management Area. The intention is that there would be no action restrictions throughout the entire area. So those are the restrictions that are currently associated with the Western Gulf of Maine closure. So that's written as no fishing vessels with various exemptions. It really means mostly no fishing with vessels that are catching groundfish. So there's no gill nets or long lines in the area, demersal long lines, or trawls or dredges. And then the southern portion is identified as a reference area, and so there would be additional restrictions there on removal of groundfish recreationally, and that the purpose of that is to allow you to see how the system responds, how the benthic habitat and the fish community responds to a situation where you don't have any groundfish removals. So that area is 10 miles wide by about 5 miles high. And so, and if the sunset provision was approved, alternative 5 was approved, that would apply to this area the same as any of the other areas. On George's Bank, the proposed DHRA is the same as the southern portion of the closed area 1 habitat management area, and it's proposed as a closure to mobile bottom tending gears. Currently under the various action alternatives, this closed area 1 south would actually be removed, so this would maintain it at least for some length of time as a research area. And then finally, the sunset provision basically would allow for administrative removal if there's specific criteria aren't satisfied, and these relate to sort of active or immediately pending use for specific types of research, which are discussed in section 2.4 in the introduction to the whole DHRA alternatives section. That should actually, I think, say 2.3. And then if a DHRA was overlapping either a habitat management or area or spawning area or potentially both, those restrictions would and designations would remain even if the DHRA itself was removed. So that's all I was going to say about DHRAs, but I'm happy to take questions.
David.
Well, not a question. However, I would like to make a motion regarding the DHRA, and so when it's appropriate, Mr. Chairman, if you would let me know.
Yeah, question, clarifying questions first from the council. Ellen.
I'm just reading the decision document, and I'm taking I have a problem with the way the Volume 3, Section 2.3.5, Alternative 5, on page 27, under Groundfish Considerations, VEC 2. It says, relative to Alternatives 2 and 3, this alternative has a negative impact, but relative to Alternative 1, no action, it has a positive impact because there would be at least a three-year opportunity to conduct groundfish habitat research. I think that's a very subjective statement. On other things, you say it's uncertain. I would say the same thing. You have no proof that there's any positive impact or negative impact for that. So I would consider rewording that. Thank you.
Other questions? Any questions from the audience? I understand there's a lot of angst about particularly one option, but you're going to have your opportunity to comment afterwards. You have a question, Patrick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions, if you will. Michelle, is lobster gear still allowed in the DHRA alternatives as currently put together?
Yes.
And is there any limitation to the kind or aim of the research that can be done in them? In other words, does the research have to inform stock assessments, or can it is it wide open, any sort of research or purpose of research?
So we identified a number of specific research topics that would, if you were considering removing the DHRAs, those would be the sort of criteria that against which you would be judging the research. So does, you know, the work that's being done align with what's specifically been identified in this amendment? Certainly other types of work may be done in these areas that relates to other different objectives. But in terms of continuing the research area or removing it, the idea would be that you'd want the research to stack up against what's identified in this document in terms of the research goals.
Terry, if I can go one more on it. So is there a method or language that would present two different studies going into a DHRA that offset each other. And I'm trying to stay away from comment now, but the way you just answered it, Michelle, sounds to me like you could have two different research projects going into the area. When I know with the Stellwagen one, is this about an unfished area? But you have somebody else studying some sort of bottom or benthic habitat study, and all of a sudden these two studies are offsetting each other. Is their language protecting that? Well, you know, we're not going to sort of negate if multiple things are going on.
I'm not sure I'm fully grasping what you're getting at. I think one of the purposes of identifying research areas would be that there would be some coordinated discussion about the type of work that goes on in these areas, such that if the actual treatments were in conflict with one another, so one person is doing a study that affects someone else's study, that hopefully that would be sorted out. Certainly, it could be the case that there would be two studies in this area that the results of which would not be pointing towards the same thing, depending on how the studies were done or whatever.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dave Waldrip, Charter Boat Relentless. I looked in the document, and I understand that under alternative 4, I guess it is, that there'd be no ground fishing allowed for charter, recreational, or party. I saw a lot of the alternatives here list prohibitions and exemptions, but I did not see any listed for the DHRA. And my question would be, are there prohibitions or exemptions in here that I'm not seeing? For example, up in the spawning areas, you're not allowed to even have a rod or reel or transit the area or have a northeast multi-species on board. I didn't see anything in here.
So I think in terms of the spawning areas that there's a number of exempted gears that would be allowed. Transiting would be allowed. So in this area, you would, some of those same things, I guess, would also be exempted. I'd need to look through and exactly the details in the document and address a specific possible exemption. But
okay, thank you.
Other questions for Michelle? Seeing none, you're up, Dave.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm a member of the Stellwagen Bank Advisory Council, been a member for many years, so I'm very much aware of the Stellwagen Bank Sanctuary Management Plan, the research that they would like to do within the sanctuary relative to ecological research. Of course, we're all aware of SERA, S-E-R-A, the Stellwagen Ecological Research Area. It's not called SERA anymore. It's now what we have before us as an option for the DHRA. It's the reference area in the lower part of Stellwagen. So I'm sensitive to the concerns and needs of the sanctuary, but I'm also, of course, sensitive to the fact that there are many users of the sanctuary, this particular area as well, recreational fishermen notably. So with that understood, I've been made aware of a problem that currently exists in the minds of some, and I think it is a valid problem, and that's Alternative 3, Stellwagen, the DHRA. As it stands right now, we have this one particular alternative with the reference area. And after public hearing, after we debate this later on in 2014, if indeed there is a decision by this council not to have a reference area, then the whole DHRA goes away. Alternative 3 is gone. Now, I want that Stellwagen DHRA, and I'm still seeking comment on the reference area. So in order to give us a better set of alternatives that will give us the freedom
to make, let's say, a wise choice when this comes back to us after public hearings. I'd like to have some alternatives or options, say options, not alternatives. So with that said, I have a motion, and the motion is on the screen. And it is that for alternative three, Stellwagen DHRA, consider making it a three-option alternative. Option 3A, include a southern 5x10 nautical mile reference area. That's the one you see in the alternative right now. Option 3B, include a 5x10 nautical mile reference area immediately north of the area defined in option 3A. Michelle has a figure she can show that will describe that particular configuration if anyone wants to see it. And then option 3C, no reference area. So those are the three options. This is on the screen. Also, here is the it's the same square nautical mile area, but again displaced from the south farther to the north. This to me seems to be a better way to go, and gives us again a bit more latitude when we discuss this later on. Relative to the amount of analysis that would be required to support these three alternatives, I'd have to turn to Michelle for some advice regarding that. I don't think it would require that much more analysis. A lot of work has been done on this already, notably the box you see to the north of the reference area that we have before us in alternative three. I think we considered that at past meetings, and we decided at the groundfish committee level, I think, and even at the habitat committee meeting, not to include it as an option. But in light of all the comments we've received from party and charter boat operators relative to the reference area, all of the opposition that we've received relative to it, I'd like to have, again, a bit more flexibility for our decisions we need to make later on. So that's my motion, Mr. Chairman.
Is there a second to the motion? Seconded by Matt McKenzie. Comments from the audience? Comments? What do you think about the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve James, Stellwagen Bank Charter Boat Association. I would say that I'm in favor of the motion. There's one consideration I guess I would throw out, and that is in the original CIRA proposal, there was a zone that was, I think, perhaps farther north that consisted of a considerable amount more bottom, not bottom mud, but just mud, period. There was a lot more mud, and I think that was a condition that was required, if I'm not mistaken, in the original Sura 1 proposal. So there may be a spot that's even better than the adjacent rectangle that's proposed. Just food for thought. Thank you.
Patrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Patrick Paquette. And so earlier today, when we thought we were going to be looking at preferred alternatives, et cetera, and where the recreational advisory panel had not had a chance to sit down and chew on the wide array of alternatives in this document, and it's been quite some time since we even had like an updated meeting, we had taken a poll in case this alternative had came, and Chairman Gibson, who couldn't be here, had asked me to read a short letter. I'm not going to go through reading the whole thing because I think it'd be a lit. I'll say this is in general. 8 of 10 members were against the DHRA as written in the document. That being said, we haven't sat down and met, and there are other alternatives that we're concerned with. So we've been working on getting something prior to you getting to select and preferred alternative. So I like that this was pushed off. So, but I thought it was important to mention that they were against this. However, I'll say this, that the no reference area, I think, could change the opinion of some on the research area in general, because that's a no fishing area, well, an alleged no fishing area because of the lobster boat, the lobster gear exemption. I would love to do the dramatic drop a lobster pot and drop a 12-ounce sinker and show you the difference, because both can catch ground fish. But we'll get to that when we get to that alternative. But this, I think, is a much better option for the public to comment on, and I think even amongst recreational anglers, you would get more of a wide array of comment than everybody standing up in a room and just going, no, 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 no. You think you get actual discussion. So I think for the purpose of public input to the council, this is much better. Thank you.
Thank you. Vito.
Yeah, we certainly would support the motion. The intent of the development of Serra 2 is to try to get all stakeholders on board. So if that's what it takes to have an additional alternative for that, fine. But we wouldn't opine on the scientific integrity of one area or the other. Our group basically surrendered to the fact that this would be an HMA, and then whatever you're doing there for research has got to be dictated by the researchers. So so we would support the additional alternative. I do question whether a no-reference area would even be viable for a DHRA. So whether that stays or not, you know, silent on that one, that piece of it.
Other comments to the motion on the board? Peter.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Peter Oster, University of Connecticut and Sea Research Foundation. One thing I'd like to clarify in terms of David's motion is that in any of the options, the status quo management, which is part of this alternative, would remain. Is that the way you were thinking about this? Yeah. Okay. This flip in the reference site would certainly be workable. There an earlier comment about the original Serra proposal with a reference site farther to the north with the current configuration, now that we're not moving west of the western boundary of the Western Gulf of Maine enclosure at the behest of the Habitat Committee from some past meeting, doesn't make that viable any longer in terms of producing the contrasts that we were trying to address with this reference area, just in terms of the research design. But as long as the status quo management would remain in any of these, then that certainly makes this very workable. Thank you.
Anybody else in the audience? Craig.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and members, Craig McDonald, Stellwagen Bank Sanctuary. I'd just like to point out for the options we see of no reference area, one of the things why recreational fishing was considered to be important within understanding how to extract the maximum value out of this area is that recreational fishing for cod in the Gulf of Maine over the last decades accounted for approximately 20 to 31% of the total catch, and that information comes from the Science Center's 2013 assessment report. That's a large share of the total cod removals from the Gulf of Maine, and I think it would be very useful for this council to understand what impact those removals by recreational fishing are having, and this reference area is the only way in which you'll be able to explicitly extract that kind of information. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, back to the council. Matt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Jerry, Doug.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I second this motion because I concur with Dr. Pierce's and what the audience has said as well, that this is an important element to what we're moving forward. Industry and all the other stakeholders have worked hard to come up with something that could work, and I think this does give a flexibility. I am a little, given Dr. Pierce's words, I'm a little confused about the option 3C, the no reference area. It seems to me that if that option were included, we would and were chosen, we would have no, there would be no point to this. And so with that in mind, perhaps I'd like to make a motion to amend to remove option 3C, if I may, if there's a second, of course.
Is there a second to the motion to amend? Your streak is over, Matt.
Had to end sometime.
Terry.
So I had a question. Now, when we discussed this at the committee level, I guess maybe the question's to Dave. Didn't Didn't it necessarily have to be in that one spot because we've been collecting data there for a while, and you didn't want to move it because we had a substantial amount of data there, and you wanted to just carry on? Am I recalling wrong, or?
Yeah, so there are additional long-term monitoring sites in the southern reference area that aren't in the northern reference area. There has been data collection throughout this area, though, to support sort of continued work.
You also, Terry? Doug?
I'll ask the same question. Now we're adding another alternative. How is this going to impact the workload of Michelle and the PDT in getting a document prepared with three additional alternatives?
January, what year?
So a little bit less, I think, has been done in terms of analyzing the impacts of the reference area in particular. So I think if an additional option is going to be added, that now would actually be a good time to do that before we complete that analysis. Obviously, contrasting two different areas is a bit more work than just looking at one area. But I think now is a useful time to sort of bring these in as opposed to waiting for a later meeting.
Tom, then Mary Beth.
I'm going to perhaps go a little farther than Michelle. This may be a good time to do it, but in answer to your question, Doug, yes, it is problematic adding alternatives, particularly in an alternative that the council considered in September in large measure and voted 17-0 not to add to the document in September.
Mary Beth.
So I think those last two comments would be my reason for not supporting this at this time. I think that there's value. I understand that it's created a compromise, and people think that this is really the best outcome in this action, I would say we should choose, you know, no action, and in the next action, add this in. Even though there are three different options that Dr. Pierce has offered here, it does look like it's adding one alternative, not three. And no action is required anyway, so on 3C, Matt, so I don't see that as an issue. But I think it's a good idea considering, you know, all of the comments we've received relative to this, but I can't support adding anything to the document.
David.
Yeah, regarding Tom Neese's point, very valid. I think I didn't vote to go in a different direction. I was part of the unanimous vote. But since that time, the sleeping giant has awakened. The party in charge of Boatfleet indeed has suddenly realized what this is all about, what it could do. And we've got the correspondence. Tom has actually gone to a meeting of a charter board association, party board association, and heard it all. And because of that, I think it's going in this direction that I have suggested makes a great deal of sense. I appreciate the analysis that we might have to go behind it, but I want to be in a position to, I think it makes sense despite whatever work it may create.
Is there any other further discussion? Terry.
Yeah, I mean, back to our discussion just an hour ago. I mean, what we have this line here, but that doesn't stop us from changing it after we get the public input on it. So, if we're just going to jump it up one notch, I would say that we vote this down and then we'll move it after we get the public input.
Further discussion? Seeing none, those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. And those opposed? Are there any abstentions? The motion carries 9-7. Is there any further discussion on this section of the document? Michelle, is there anything in the issues that need to be addressed pertinent to this section?
I guess potentially the issue that was already alluded to by one of the commenters about lobster fishing in these areas. I'm trying to remember exactly what I wrote under this discussion item in the decision document. Generally, we've been advised by the regional office that the council can restrict lobster fishing within council management plans if we can demonstrate that a restriction is needed to successfully manage a species in one of our plans, and that if the council chooses to manage lobster gear, that there should be meaningful coordination with the Atlantic States and their lobster board in developing measures. So, you know, we've sort of discussed this quite a bit over the years in the context of habitat areas, first with the Ammon Rock area and whether lobster gear would be restricted there, and then more recently it's come up in the context of the reference area and the DHRA alternative 3, but there's not really ever been any particular conclusion reached in terms of direction to go in.
I would note that there are two members of the ASMRC Lobster Board sitting at the table right here, and I can, three actually, and I can advise everyone that this would be quite a hot discussion at the commission. So have you talked to commission staff about this? Okay, is there any further discussion on the dedicated habitat research areas? Mary Beth.
Just one question relative to the lobster issue. What information is available to the PDT to analyze what kind of effort is going on in any of these areas?
So we do have trip reports for some lobster fishing vessels that don't carry a federal permit, aren't required to submit a federal VTR, so there is lobster effort that is definitely missing from our analysis, kind of like the shrimp effort we talked about earlier. We could probably do some work to get a handle on how much effort we might be missing, but we don't have spatial data, you know, for that effort. So we have, you know, some sense of how that effort is distributed, and to the extent that it's captured in the VTRs, that's in all the economic tables that have been prepared so far on these different alternatives.
Well, I don't want to belabor it, but my sense is that it's unlikely that you have the ability to capture most of the effort, that maybe you could get a very small percentage, and trying to do that can be problematic. But again, Terry said that let the commission talk about it.
I suspect this will be on one of the upcoming commission lobster board agendas. If there's no further discussion on this issue, let's move on to framework adjustments and monitoring.
So I don't know that we need to have a really extensive discussion of this today, but we did want to draw your attention to this section of the document because it was largely written after the September council meeting. So there's two alternatives here. The first sort of describes what's kind of currently a ad hoc approach to revising area management in terms of the timing of those actions and sort of an overall strategy for it, and describes what monitoring and information is currently done that supports these kind of discussions and analyses. Alternative two sort of wraps up a bunch of potential adjustments to that, so taking a more planned approach to reconsidering area management on sort of a specified timetable. What we suggested, as the technical team sort of put out as a straw man, was after 10 years you'd reevaluate all these management areas. And we sort of had discussed that around sort of the the life history of these animals, how long you would expect it might take to definitely see a response in some of these populations. But we put that out there as kind of a starting point for discussion, I guess. There's a number of additional monitoring elements that I think if we had some more data in certain areas would really benefit redoing this approach, redoing this kind of an evaluation down the road. There's a lot of, you know, sort of fine-scale data for some of these smaller management areas specifically that they're hard to characterize in terms of fish distributions and other things. So having more information about them, and especially if these areas become close to certain gears, we're not catching, you know, there's not the fishery-dependent data, so it's important. And we wanted to sort of emphasize that, you know, this has been a challenging process, and if there's anything that the council can make recommendations about improved monitoring that would sort of enhance our ability to do this later and do it better, later, update it better, that would be at least worth making the recommendation. Obviously, the council isn't going out and gathering the data itself. And then there's a couple of specific items that have been identified in the section that would be frameworkable. So addition of habitat management areas would be able to be done in a framework, and then also measures for those habitat areas, I believe, is how it's written. There's actually, in the no-action alternative, it describes what's currently frameworkable in our FMPs. There's a lot of things that are currently frameworkable. It's a pretty extensive list, so there's tons of things that are already covered in the regulations as they stand now, but those are two things that sort of could be clarified. So I'd encourage you to take a look at these alternatives, and if we're going to come back and review this document at a later meeting, then maybe get into the details at that point.
Are there any questions for Michelle on this section of the document? Tom?
Just a clarifying question. Did I just hear you say that we're going to be able to make new habitat management areas through a framework? Does that include revising or eliminating existing habitat management areas through a framework?
I think it would if we went forward with the language that currently exists. That's something that the Habitat Committee has been discussing for quite a while, and we've had sort of on the back burner as a potential measure would be to add or update or remove habitat management areas in a framework. So I think that discussion originated probably before we integrated the discussion with the Groundfish Committee, but that's been a notion that at least the Habitat folks have been working with for a while, so that's how the alternative is specified.
Other questions for Michelle? Any questions from the audience? Seeing none, we're moving on to the next section.
I may have already covered most of this morning, just to point out that there's both essential fish habitat and the next slide is, I believe, on habitat area particular concern designations. Those are all in Volume 2, and the council did identify preferred alternatives after public hearings on that phase of the amendment. The updated designations, in many cases, are sort of a refinement of the existing designations, and we added additional data sources. Often the designations are limited to appropriate depth and temperature limits, so they really provide sort of a refined picture of the habitats that are typically used by these different species. There's a lot of state survey data that were added that weren't considered when the original omnibus amendment was done. So we sort of have a better confirmed picture of where areas these species are occupying at different stages in their life in more inshore waters. Something that will be added to the draft at some point are the other alternatives that were not identified as preferred in 2007. There's quite a few of them, depending on the species, and quite a few maps that go with it, so I just haven't had time to sort of reorganize that yet. But that'll eventually be in the document sort of for completeness as alternatives that were considered by the council. In terms of the habitat areas of particular concern, there's a couple no-action alternatives, some rivers in Maine for Atlantic salmon, and then also, as we discussed earlier, the Cod-A HPC on the northern edge of Georges Bank. And then in 2007, the council identified some preferred alternatives. There's basically four that are sort of on the inshore and continental shelf areas. The inshore juvenile cod one basically goes from Cape Cod up through the Gulf of Maine and waters shallower than 20 meters. The Great South Channel juvenile cod just covers really sort of the channel and somewhat west of it, the portion of juvenile cod EFH, the proposed EFH designation there. And then the existing Cache's Ledge habitat area and the existing Western Gulf of Maine habitat area are identified also as possible HAPCs. And then there's a number of HAPCs that overlap with different canyons, seamounts, and areas of the continental slope, and those go all the way from the Canadian border to down around Virginia to Norfolk Canyon. And a lot of the issues in actually managing fishing in some of those areas are covered in alternatives in the Coral Amendment, which we separated out of the EFH Amendment. So that's all I have.
You're about out of air. Any questions for Michelle? Jeff?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question. I'd like to make a comment, bring some information to the council on this section, if I could.
Yeah, could you hang on to see if there's any questions, and I'll come back to you.
Thank you.
Any questions in the audience? Okay, Jeff, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted the council to be aware that, of course, one portion of this amendment would be the potential to look at redesignating essential fish habitat. And as it's stated on page 29, there's potential for additional designations not selected in 2007. Just wanted to let the council know that this, as a council member from Cape May, we have had a marina operator contact us about EFH designation for winter flounder eggs and the problems they have in that area for dredging during the wintertime. And over the last couple of months, we've been in contact with staff, with NERO staff and agency staff, and we're beginning to do some baseline work to evaluate that request. So there may be, when we get the public hearing, a request to reevaluate the designation of winter flounder EFH eggs in this man-made area. So I just wanted to flag that for council members. I think leadership knows about it. Tom knows about it. So there may be something coming in that area relative to this section of the document. Thank you.
Dave.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The gentleman involved contacted me as well. We've got a letter from him, and there's been contact back and forth here among us. And it seems to me that this is one of those instances where there's always some little part of anything this complex that doesn't work out quite the way you expect it to, and this is one of those cases. I would be inclined to, I would suggest that we accommodate this situation as well as we can.
Okay, Michelle, are there any other issues that you would like some input from the council?
No, but I would defer to any other staff that feel like we're missing some input that would be useful at this stage. Okay, no, thank you.
Okay, well, I want to thank you and the PDT and the CAT for a bucket load of work. But before we adjourn, I'd like to thank the audience who's been patient and been here all day and would like to make some comments to the council. So if you could come forward and state your name on the record, we'd love to hear what you have to say. Upset.